Welcome back to the Solid Foundations podcast. Today I have the pleasure again of sitting with my homeboy Philip. Philip, I know you're a humble man, but I did want to let you know that still to this day, you're still the most downloaded episode of the Solid Foundations podcast. Oh, wow. So it's a pleasure to have you back. You know, and in the show notes, I'll link Philip's previous episodes. So this way you can learn more about Philip's background, because today we're not going to start from the very beginning. We want to talk more about what it took for you to build your business and why you're different. And I'll chime in why our path is different from a lot of our homies that we came up with, we grew up with. And I want to really focus on that. And So let's begin with your journey. You're a professional tattoo artist. Where did that begin?
That just began really on the streets. I used to draw a lot. So I'd draw things for people, draw on people's school folders, do things like that. Yeah. And I remember one of the homies came up with a tattoo machine, Ramon Cardenas, and he asked me to tattoo on him. And I never tattooed on anyone. I think I scribbled on my legs or something with a homemade machine, but... Yeah, he asked me to tattoo on him, and reluctantly I did, and then I ended up tattooing a whole bunch of people that weekend.
You went from writing on folders to tattooing on the homies
right away?
Writing
folders, walls. Yeah. I was kind of the guy that did like the big pieces on the walls and stuff, too.
Well, with the spray paint and stuff? Mm-hmm. And so, was there your first one good? Is that why everybody else wanted it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's good now. I'll look at something I did 5 years ago, and I don't think it's good.
Back then, they're like, man, you got down on this?
It was straight.
Yeah.
He never covered it either. He got all kinds of cool work around it, so he thought it was cool.
Yeah, and then so did you fall in love right away after that tat?
Yeah, that first I did. Tat? I did. But that was, I mean, it was not professional for years, so it was just kind of learning on my own. There was no apprenticeships back in those days. There was nobody to teach you, nobody to school you on how
no
to do
apprentices
it.
Like around you or just in the industry?
In the industry, back in those days, it was like dang near impossible to get an apprenticeship. And I had gone into a couple of shops and asked.
Yeah.
And they just weren't interested.
And so your practice constantly just came from homeboys coming over and saying, I want this.
Yeah.
And we'll learn together.
It was more of learning how to trace, because, I mean, I could draw, but it would be like the Lowrider magazine or Teen Angel magazine.
Yeah.
They would bring all of those things, and then we would have to, like, we'd just trace it up, pattern it up, and then tattoo it. So it was just kind of emulating things. It wasn't, I mean, it was artistic to a point, but not so much. Now it's more creating.
And what age is this right now?
Man, I was like 15, 16.
Okay. So 15, 16, you're starting. When do you find that you're getting into your groove? And one, are you charging at all up to this point?
No, not when I first started. It was kind of...
Yeah.
No, you can pay for anything, no.
So when's the first charge?
I don't think it was till later, because I also went through a point where I stopped tattooing for like a good 3 or 4 years, you know? It was like doing the church thing, and back then it was like real, like frowned upon.
Yeah.
So I stopped altogether. So it was like when my kids were younger, you know.
Well, take me back there. What was frowned upon, going to church?
No. The church, like people from church, were frowned upon the tattoos.
Yeah.
Which is weird now, because I tattoo a bunch of pastors and people in churches and stuff. Nobody trips on it that way.
Yeah. Well, things have changed, huh? And so, when was the year span from when you started making money from it, from when you're starting just practicing?
I still, like, if you consider the money you make now from it, like, you know, people were paying 20, 30, 40 bucks. Basically for your supplies, you know. So I would say probably like in my early 20s is when I first started doing it. Then it became kind of, you know, because I had all my kids and it became my extra money. So my job would pay the rent and all that other stuff. And then my tattoo money that I would make at night would pay for their sports.
And that was my next question. What'd you do in that time that you took off from tattooing? What job did you get?
I was landscaping. Landscape construction, things like that.
So labor work, you do that for 4 years. How'd you enjoy that compared to sitting down and tattooing?
It was cool because it was steady. And then, you know, you're trying to become like a man and trying to have a family. So you're kind of like, okay, cool. I got a real
job.
Tattooing still wasn't looked at as like a real job.
Yeah. Especially when you're not charging.
Yeah.
And so What happens then after 4 years? What turns the switch on to say, I'm going to go back?
It was actually like one of the leaders in the church, one of the elders in the church. His name was Jesse. He was a tattoo artist too. He's like, it was just a random thing. Like, what do you really like doing? I said, I really like tattooing. Mm-hmm. He was like, well, why don't you tattoo? I'm like, well, you know, I was doing it out of my conscience thing, thinking it was something wrong.
Yeah.
And then he just really broke down all the scriptures and told me why that was being misinterpreted.
Yeah, you know.
Like, so boom, all right, I can tattoo again, bam, I start tattooing right away.
So that's interesting. So, you know, you and I, we have the same backgrounds when it comes to kicking it with the homies. Now, you're older than me, so by the time I started kicking it, I didn't really know you, and I think vice versa, you didn't know me. But it's not like we're in the neighborhood and saying, hey, let's make sure we all make it to church on Sunday.
No.
So how do you go from there? Like, what got you interested in church and got you enrolled in there?
One of my mentors, Mr. Ramos, used to work, Pastor Richard. He used to work at the high school. And he worked at the junior high first and then the high school. So I would just spend a lot of time with him because he was real into the Chicano movement. He was into, like, you know, he was just a real center person.
Yeah.
So I started going with him, hanging out with him. And then one time I went to his house, he took me to his house for dinner with his family. And what really moved me is, like, around the dinner table, he went around and asked all the kids, so what was a good thing about your day? And they did the whole thing, and I was like, dude, we didn't even really eat together, let alone ask. And then he said, well, what was the challenge? So he's like, he was like having dialogue with his kids. So I was like, dude, that was dope. That was like a different family dynamic that I wasn't used to.
Those were his kids, not just like a group of kids.
No, his kids, it was his family. Yeah, and his wife, they were, you know, kind of, they were all super engaged, and the kids were talking back. Because I remember if I asked my kids, they'd be like, I don't know. It was cool.
You don't get too much. I forgot.
Yeah.
What age was that?
I think I was like 15, probably 15, gonna be 16.
Okay. And so you're still kicking it heavy then, right?
Yeah, I was still kicking it. Yeah. Well, a bunch of the homies started going.
Okay.
Like, we all started going because Pastor Ron Arzua, they kind of started mentoring us, taking us camping, doing all kinds of cool things. So
does this have anything to do with like Victory Outreach?
No, well, different? I think it was Cornerstone Church on Bass Street.
I just remember some of the homies, but they're like thumping that Bible, talking about trying to push Victory Outreach down your throat, and of course, to push people away.
The bullhorn prophets?
Yeah, but that was different from what you said.
Yeah, it was different. I think originally Cornerstone came out of that movement, like the same people that founded Victory Outreach, they came out of it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as legalistic, and I'm not saying, like, I haven't been to Victory Outreach since I was a kid, so I don't know, but in that time, it was really legalistic, can't do this, can't do that.
Okay.
So there goes the tattooing.
And that's where you end up getting it from. So the homies don't have a big problem with it. They're down with it. They want to, they're even curious themselves.
Yeah, no, it was kind of a spiritual movement that went on in Santa Barbara at the time. So people didn't really have an issue with it. You know, there would be issues when you would have, like, you know, east side, west side together in the same thing. That was a trip.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, that was like a good time in all of our lives. We talk about it.
No, that's good. That's great to hear. I know me coming up, and as I'm getting 17, 18, and I end up having kids and starting my family, mm-hmm. I did get into a little, you know, I did get some flack from not kicking it as much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got that.
So that's why I'm curious to know, you know, about then. It's like, you're being a family man. Then, you know, I start a business. I'm even employing some of the homies, but I'm now a lot of the homies, and now I'm still getting flack of, now I'm not kicking it, partying, getting drunk and high with you guys anymore.
I would get that kind of flack, even got in a couple fights with people, mm-hmm. you know, and it's crazy because a lot of those people that were kind of the bullies are trying to press up on people. They have a different mind frame now. They're like, man, that was stupid. We're kids, you know?
Yeah. Experience, right? Yeah. That's why I was curious about that.
We get a lot, but I would just, you know, I would still be around. But I also became real selective on who I was around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, same here. And so you're back in church. The pastor puts the seed in you to start again.
Mm-hmm.
Is it you go back to the same way you were doing it before you stopped, or you go back with a new way of
No, tattooing? I was still homemade. Uh-huh. I mean, he had like machines, but I didn't know how to use them. I didn't know how to sterilize them, so it was like, make a new rig every single time.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, messing around that way. And then I, actually one of my friends, Chuck's from Goleta, he came up on a tattoo machine, like a real one, and he brought it. But it didn't have the needles, but it had the machine, so we figured a way to rig it, and that was kind of like my first interaction with an actual tattoo machine.
Did you notice a big difference?
Yeah. I mean, the lines, you could get bolder lines. Yeah. I mean, you would do like a lot smaller lines with the single needle, and it freaking hurts.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I don't know the difference between tattooing with the professional and homemade, but I know the feeling from getting it.
Well, they all hurt. They all hurt about the same, but the thing is that the single needle just takes like triple, quadruple the time.
Yeah.
You know, like my back, I got the Santa Bruta on my back, and that was like all day.
Yeah.
And I was like bleeding to death, half in shock, you know.
It was just
a really painful way of getting tattoos.
I feel you. So moving, what's the next phase to where you evolve into the next step of your
tattooing? I kind of set up like a little studio in my garage.
Okay.
My kids were small, so I didn't want to go get a second job, but I needed the extra income, you know. And that's when we were like already living in Oxnard. Well, the guys in Oxnard, they're coming out and paying me, you know. They never ever tried to get anything free from me. They would always like support me. It's a lot to this day, a lot of those guys support me or their kids or whatever. So I just started tattooing. It was like my extra money, you know, because like on Sundays, it was always a thing for me to take my kids to eat.
Mm-hmm.
We'd go to church, we'd go eat, we'd go do something, you know, like that. And that was the money that I got from that. So
because you're still doing landscaping at the time?
No, I had transitioned to like a telecom company
by
then, yeah, when we moved to Ventura County.
And so when was the major leap from I'm leaving all other jobs and I'm starting tattooing full time?
Shoot, I'm trying to think of it was when my wife and I were first together. We were, it's about 12, 13 years ago, I would say. But it was like, I was working for that company. I was an operations manager for that company.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was the whole economic downturn. So they gave all the managers a choice, taking a 50% pay cut with an incentive where you can actually make more, or you could take the severance pay and take a layoff.
Uh-huh.
And they talked to us on Thursday and told us, we'll give you until Monday. You can take the rest of the time off and think about it. I go, no, I'll take it.
The severance?
I'll take the severance. Uh-huh. Cause at the time I was actually at the tail end of a divorce with my kid's mother and everything like that. And it's just, I needed to be there. Because I was having to leave, and they were ditching school, and they were acting up because they were in the middle of that whole thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I need to spend more time with them. So I quit that job, which was crazy. They didn't want me to quit. They tried to convince me to stay. But that the rest was history. I remember that, but I remember that night waking up in a cold sweat thinking, oh, no, I'm not going to get that check every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But they were very generous. They gave me more of a severance than...
Than most?
Yeah. I was able to survive for basically like almost a year.
Dang.
On severance. So they,
on their severance,
yeah,
alone?
They were very generous. So, but did, it was still like, it was like, oh shoot, what did I do?
Did you waste any time?
No, heck no. Because by that time I was already every night, every weekend I was tattooing.
Yeah.
Every day except for Sunday, basically.
But now you have so much more time on your hands, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not going to that other job.
Yeah.
Are you filling that with tattooing?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Right away.
Just started tattooing full time.
Out of the garage still?
Mm-hmm. Out of the garage.
And how are you getting new clients? Just all word of mouth?
Yeah, it's all word of mouth. Then like all the people from Santa Barbara started coming down, and then, mm-hmm. you know, then they're now everybody's paying. So they would come down, and the people from Oxnard I would meet, and even people that I had met in the past, like in San Bernardino or LA, they were starting to come down, and we're getting tattooing them. But I started getting better, you know?
Yeah.
Started getting better, and then it just started going that way. But it's still... I still didn't want to take it to the professional level because I never dug tattoo shops.
Mm-hmm.
I never dug the vibe. I always felt like the artists were a little bit cocky just from my experience of the ones that I had gone into. A lot of drugs, you know, being a party. Yeah,
spot.
It was a party thing, like a lot of girls and all kinds of stuff like that. It just wasn't my scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really like being around a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so I resisted and resisted and resisted. And it was actually my wife she's the one that kind of like pushed me.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, you got to go into
it. Good
woman
does.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know. I may have never made that jump.
Mm-hmm.
I may have never made that jump. And then, I was super nervous to start the first shop I was in.
Yeah. But let's stay right there because this is the most critical spot because not everybody is built to be an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Some are meant to be, but a lot of people aren't. But yet they'll never make that transition because of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So in that critical moment, like walk me through what your thought process was and at that moment.
I just, it got to a point where it's like, I have to make this work. This is all I have to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have another job. I just lost that career. That was a good paying job, good benefits. So I have to do it. So I just got to hustling. But I've kind of always had that mentality. No matter what I did, I've got to make it work. I've got to, you know, push through.
Because you could have applied for another job. No? Did you think about that at all?
I did a little bit. Like, even the company, they brought me back as like an independent contractor. So I would do like big jobs and project manage stuff for them here and there.
Yeah.
And I even tried to go back and work for them a little bit, but I just I wasn't there. Yeah. I could never go back to a regular 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, I feel you.
Even though I work more than 9-to-5.
Yeah,
but I could never do it.
So there was something in your mind that switched and said, there's no going back now.
Yeah, there's no going back. I've got kids to take care of. I've got things.
Yeah, and so is it at that point you went and got a building of your own, or did you go in somebody else's shop?
No, I worked for people first. Like, I worked for a shop in Port Hueneme, and it was cool. I learned a lot. I did really good. That's kind of like when I went through a different phase. I tell the young artists that we're mentoring, everybody goes to that kind of cocky phase because you're doing good.
Yeah.
I remember getting there, and out of all these experienced artists, I was actually the busiest one. And I'm the one that first came off the street. So every day, I went for like months with always having a client every day.
Yeah.
And then your head kind of blows up. So that was the kind of...
Because you could see everybody in the shop. Their chair's empty.
Well, and they're pumping you up because they're getting a percentage of what you make. Oh, that's right. Great, man. You're doing good and everything like that. So... It was a good experience, but it still wasn't my vibe. Like, it started out really strict and then popped off to like a party spot.
So it ended up becoming what you didn't want to.
Yeah.
And what happens then once that starts happening?
By then, I think I just started tattooing at home. I moved in with my wife when we were still dating. And I just set up like kind of in the garage, did that thing. And then one of the guys that owned the other shop, he was a co-owner. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of a bad split. They split, and then I rented space from him. So I didn't want to go to work for him, but I kind of wanted to rent space.
Yeah.
And then I was, we got to organizing like tattoo parties. So we'd go to Lompoc, Santa Maria, LA, all those things. And those would be crazy, man. You would have like 20, 30 people waiting to get a tattoo. You'd be tattooing all day.
But how many artists go?
Take like 2, 3, sometimes 5 artists with us.
And they're just busting out like small pieces?
No, you're busting out everything, dude. Every different size thing, yeah. You try to stay within a size, but...
Yeah, because I just think you'd have to crank people out in order to get the next one, unless you guys are doing like 24-hour parties.
And those were like the money makers. Those were like, okay, got to go school shopping for the kids, so we're going to go do a tattoo party because that's going to make all that money.
And so you mentioned you pay rent at the second shop you're at.
Yeah.
The first shop, do you pay rent, or you're
at hourly employee? Okay. Back in the days, it was 50-50. Now guys get like a way better percentage. And so I think like our shop offers a really good percentage.
Do you do minimum wage and a percentage, or is it just percentage?
Yeah. So if you charge $100 for a tattoo, you took home $50, but you also had to buy the supplies. Mm-hmm. You had to buy your needles. You had to buy your ink.
Yeah.
So it just was, I don't.
And if you sit around all day, you don't make no money.
Make no money.
And the second shop is the same thing, or you just pay rent?
No, I paid rent. I worked out a rent thing with him, which was cool because I didn't necessarily work for his shop, but I worked there. Mm-hmm. But he was kind of like a strict, like he would never give you a key. Like there were times I had like an early appointment and I would show up and he's not there yet. But it was cool though. I appreciate it. It was like a launching board.
Yeah, it could have been much worse.
Yeah.
And so how big of a change was it for you from getting a percentage to where, right, you don't bring anybody in, you don't make any money. But once you commit to rent, whether you bring anybody in or not, that rent's still your bill.
Yep.
So how was that for you?
It wasn't that hard for me. It was actually better because you kept more of your own money. I think it's a goal that every artist should work for, to get on the rent instead of percentage. But I was just hustling, man. I had already built that clientele. I had people coming. I would work whenever.
Yeah.
Always, you know.
Did you go into that second deal thinking like rent will be better for me, or was it more I don't got a choice, so yeah, I got to pay rent?
Let me rewind a little bit. So I went to tattooing at the house. And then they passed the tattoo laws. It was the AB 3000 laws. Uh-huh. So then they made it like super, before it was like a no-no. Then it became illegal. Like if you don't have a license, if you're tattooing, like tattooing at home, even if you do have a license, and that your house will never get certified. So like for our tattoo shop, we have to pay the city, my own practitioner license, and the shop has to have its own license. So those laws became really strict and I got sketched out. I'm like, I don't need any kind of drama or somebody to snitch on you. I know like during COVID, people were doing hair and cutting hair and everything. And you would hear about like people getting snitched on. But so I didn't want that. So I went into that shop and it was kind of cool. It was a good experience.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all about the the rent over the percentage, because like you said, you have the ability to make more. Mm-hmm. But I think some would get caught up on that because they get so caught up on, well, I'm going to have to pay something. I'm going to have to, it's that commitment. You know, I got to commit to something. And it holds people back because they don't want to be, they don't want to be tied down to that debt of what it takes to become an entrepreneur or business owner. Mm-hmm. But they'll go spend money on a TV or, you know, or just charge it on the card and they'll have that debt. And it's like something that they really, they can't see. And I know I've done that before too when it comes to like buying things on retail compared to something that I may need, you know, that I may need. Like we were talking about insurance before we started recording.
Yeah.
You're like, damn, you know, a few hundred for insurance, but you see something you really like, you're like, oh, I'm going to just get that. You know, I need that for the house, you know, so...
I think what it is a lot of people in that job, they want like the freedom of being an artist, but they don't have any kind of financial literacy. Mm-hmm. So the advantage for me was working for Alan Pugh for that telecom company. I just soaked up so much game. Like I was in charge of like $1 million jobs and people, you know, people that were making $100,000, $150,000 a year.
Yeah.
So I gained all of that financial literacy. So to me, it was like, the rent wasn't scary to pay the shop. I would actually pay it the first week. So bam, I would knock it out. This is out of the way. Now I just keep going. Knock it out.
So you bring up a good, I get a good question to the mind for a brand new youngster or anybody who's starting in the tattoo industry. Let's say youngster because they don't have any job experience, mm-hmm. but they know they want to be a tattoo artist. They are a good artist. And now there's so much to practice on, right? Mm-hmm. Fake skin and kits you could buy. Would you say your best route is to just get into a shop, become an apprentice, and do your thing? 100%. Or, yeah, get other jobs. See what it's like to go work for somebody else in a different industry and then take that experience and go into the tattoo.
Well, what we do is because we do apprentice a lot of people, like way more than most shops, and it's just kind of like that's kind of our identity, mm-hmm. getting people into it. But what I tell people is just like college. Every college student has a little side job. Go get a side job and then commit your time in here. But with the apprenticeship, you're not just learning. The first thing you learn is the sterilization. Then you're learning the tattoos, tattoo technique, which you'll learn for the rest of your life. But also like the financial literacy and business part of it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, I'm always challenging, well, what's your goal? What do you want to take home a day? You know, what are you spending on supplies? Like, so there's a lot more to it that we're trying to teach them.
And how, like, what's the percentage split on that? You're teaching them these things because if they know it, they're going to be better for your shop for sure. But two... the other percentage is how much, why do you do it because of you didn't get that? Is there a big part of you that wants to give because it wasn't there for you?
Because I feel like it, that and also, you know, I didn't have that opportunity, so I want to provide that opportunity, but also teach them to do it the right way because you see some dirty stuff on the streets. You know, people are tattooing and they're you know, drinking and smoking and it's just like super unsterile. So it's like if they're going to do it anyway, I'd rather teach them how to do it the right way.
Yeah, and you know, you did me the favor of... bringing in my stepson to talk to him. He was interested about apprenticeship and starting down that route. And you stressed in that talk, like, don't do it at home. Don't do it in the garage. Yeah. Like, you kept on putting it on there. And it just stuck into my mind. And I was like, oh, Philip did that all growing up. Yeah. But now it's starting to make sense because of the laws and the strictness of it.
Yeah.
And how you could your career could almost be over before you really even start it, right? If you get busted.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Like they could fine you up to $10,000 and it's a misdemeanor.
Uh-huh. So you got something on your record.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. But the thing is it's so easy to access tattoo equipment now. You just go on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Before you had to have like the shop you were in, the licensing and all that stuff.
And so, give that to them to get that to order.
So we see, I would say like at least 50% of the apprentices never work out. They never finish it. They don't because they just, I'm going to go home and make money. And then they're lost, you know. Mm-hmm. You never really see them become professional tattooers, but the ones that did do it, the guys that stuck with me, those guys are doing really well. You know, like I got a buddy Outer, and he's just like all over the country traveling, tattooing. My buddy Mikey, he has his own little shop, private studio, but he's just doing some crazy stuff. You know, and then you know another one of other apprentices that graduated from us works at 805 Inc. now because she lives in Santa Barbara. So it's like they stuck it out; they did it right.
All right, so we're talking now kind of about you being in your shop. So let's rewind a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're at that shop where you're paying rent. Mm-hmm. What's the next step from there on your journey?
What did I do? Actually, it was a buddy of mine. He had another shop. I had gone to his shop first. Didn't really dig the vibe. Mm-hmm. It was like a freaking free-for-all. People walk around smoking weed in the shop and everything. Good people, good friends of mine, you know, like I'm still friends with them, yeah. but just wasn't me. So I left there. Well, then I was at my buddy Danny's shop, and then my other buddy called me and says, like, I'm just so tired of this whole thing. I'm going to just quit, you know, but would you come manage the shop for me? Mm-hmm. So he asked me to manage it, and he was basically like, I'm going to shut the doors unless you come help. So I went and helped him out, you know, and ended up being for a long time. So I was like running the whole thing, bringing people in, hiring people, you know, that whole bit. So that was cool. That was a good experience, because then I learned the management side of a tattoo shop.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So you helped him, and then you also got help from learning all the experience.
Yeah.
Did he kind of show you like, oh, these are the ropes, or he was kind of just like, here, learn as
no,
you go?
No, I was more like, here.
Yeah.
And the only thing that he wouldn't do, and it's his business, his prerogative, he wouldn't show you any of the financials at all. That was just his thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't really dig that from it, because you can't really manage unless you know the financials and all of that kind of stuff.
It's hard to make decisions.
Yeah, so it was just a different management style, but it's working for him. He's doing good. He's got like one of the biggest shops in Ventura County, so that's cool. But, you know, it was good. I got the...
How long was that?
It was dang near 10 years, almost 10 years.
And so 10 years there managing, and still an artist too, your own. Yep. How many artists were under you at that time?
Went from like 5 to, at times, like 15, 20.
Oh, the influx is like that, huh?
Yeah.
And so...
Well, the shop just grew. As soon as we took it, it was like... It went from like the 5, and they weren't even a steady 5. They were like, if they show up, type 5.
Yeah.
But then it just grew. We started growing and started doing it. I started implementing a lot of stuff that Alan had taught me on the business side. And then it just grew.
And Alan was who again?
He owned G Solutions, which is a telecom company.
Got it.
Originally worked for another company, CompuWave.
Yeah.
And so it was computers and telephones. It spun off on the telephone, and I was actually his first employee.
Yeah, and so he taught you a lot about
business.
He asked
me, like, hey, I'm going to buy this side of it. I don't have any employees. I don't have anything yet, and you want to come to work.
Yeah, because that's important. You know, it's like you're an example of somebody who loves what they do and turned it into a business. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for everybody, you know. Just because you're a good tattoo artist doesn't mean you're going to be a good tattoo shop owner. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I wonder how much of that came from you getting that business background from others. And it's
everything.
Just great to hear.
Yeah, I'd say like everything, learning
But
that.
It's great to hear now you're teaching business in. You're not just showing them the ropes of how to tattoo, you're teaching them business. And that is rare, because unfortunately a lot of people live in a scarcity mindset, not in a world of abundance. Mm-hmm. You know, and the fact that you're teaching these people that are coming through your doors with no contract of saying, you're sticking with me for the rest of your life because of I taught you this stuff. You're like, hey, I just want to give. Do with it what
you there's
made.
No guarantee that they're going to stick with you. And sometimes people leave for the most part, on good things. You know, they're going to go do something else. But sometimes there's bad situations. You got to let people go. But the ones that stick it through, you know.
Yeah.
They make it. But it's you've got to go into it. When you're teaching them, you got to understand that half of these people aren't going to be here.
Yeah.
I remember watching this thing on the Navy SEALs, and they were saying that, you know, there's like 400 of you guys are here, but there's going to be, you know, probably 1/3 of you guys at the end of this.
Yeah.
Close straight up. So if you want to quit now, quit.
Yeah, when they're going through their buds training.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it is. And you got to have thick skin. You can't take it personal. It used to bum me out. Like they would leave or something would happen, and you just
You see so much greatness in them, you know?
Yeah, and then, you know, you see them make some mistakes, and it's like,
And is there something that sticks out to you of like you could tell this person's going to make it, or you just can't tell?
Yeah, you can't. You think.
Uh-huh.
Because there was like a couple of our apprentices there at the tail end of it. I was like, fudge, I don't know if this guy's going to make it, man. He doesn't really have the work ethic. He's a little bit shaky. And I remember telling my wife, like, I don't know what to do with him, you know?
Yeah.
And now he's like he's like our leading walk-in artist for the last few months, you know? So he's doing it.
Yeah, so it reinforces you. I just got to give what I got. I can't be picking and choosing.
It kind of made me reset, because I thought that I was able to tell who was going to make it, who wasn't, who to invest in, who wasn't. But I think sometimes God has a bigger plan. So
absolutely.
Someone you might be looking at that's not going to make it is actually going to be the one that's going to make it. And if you go back, that's kind of my story. Uh-huh. Going in a tattoo shop and they say, you might as well give up. You'll never be a good tattooer. You'll never be a professional tattooer. So it's like it's those diamond in the rough that are going to be the ones.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, you speak about that God has a plan, and that's what sticks out to me is when I'm working with kids or an adult, and especially like kids, is easy. They're sponges, so they'll take whatever you give them, and you know that's going to be a part of them now, because they're soaking everything in. Adults a lot of times are like brick walls. You know, you could do as much as you want.
Well, young adults are like, they just got to the point, because you have to be at least 18. They're just getting to the point where they know it all.
For sure.
I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm not listening to anybody. So it's like, you're almost parenting them in a way. You become like an extra parent.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why I made up my mind a long time ago. It's just like, Gil, you're just going to give. Don't expect anything back from them. Let God's going to repay you, not them.
Yeah.
So just do the work, give, pour in, and let it be what it may.
Yeah. I remember somebody telling me one time, like, why give to these guys on the corner that are asking for money? You know, how do you know what they're going to do with it? I said, what does it matter what they do with it? Because you're giving as if you're giving to God. So you just give for good sake, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember that. Like, I'm giving. I help that person even though they may have not stuck with me. You know, maybe they don't even mention you for the rest of their life. Most of them do. But, you know, maybe they just completely take it for granted. But you're giving for giving sake, you know?
Absolutely. And so what's the ending point after that 10 years? What brings that to a close?
COVID.
Wow.
COVID hit, and then I was just like going through a bunch of other things. So I'm like, I just want to do it on my own. I made this shop a lot of money, and he was generous with me too. Like it was a good situation, but I'm like, I just got to do it on my own. But I still, to be honest with you, I think that I went too soon on that.
That you left too soon?
I went too soon on starting that shop, the shop that I started in Oxnard. I think that there was a lot of like mental things that I had to work out or maturity that would have benefited me. Like, so I started working on that stuff in the middle, going through life challenges and things like that. But I think I started too soon, but at least God used it to kind of propel me to do what we've got going on now.
And is that Oxnard shop, is that the one I went and visited? Did some work on me in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that your shop as well? Because I know you got one.
No, well, we just consolidated. Like, okay. So we had people that we rented space to. And what we decided is we want all of the artists in the Santa Paula shop, because it's a big shop. It's really big. We wanted all the artists there, and we let the girls kind of take over that shop. So it was it was Oxnard? A win-win, yeah.
Okay. And so you're in Oxnard, you get that shop. Like, explain a little bit. What do you mean? You get the shop in Oxnard. It was a nice shop. It seemed busy and buzzing. Mm-hmm. So what exactly was going on? Like, can you explain a little bit more in detail?
I wasn't able to put a lot into it because I was going through things mentally that I had to like sort out.
Uh-huh.
So if I was like more mentally aware or more mentally strong, I would have been able to do things a lot better. But it was still like a learning, you
know? And that was your very first one that was yours? Did you have partners or was...
No, it's me, yeah.
And so...
It was good though, because a lot of the people there, like... a lot of those artists stuck with me for years. They've been with me for years. So they're still with us.
Where'd you get those artists? Did you bring some with you or did you hire them all new?
I hired everybody new. Like I would know, a lot of them were people that would talk to me online. Like, how do I do this? How do I do that? Like people that I was trying to help, you know?
Okay.
And they became like really freaking good artists, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you bring up another good point, like networking, reaching out. And again, you're talking about, you're giving knowledge and wisdom to these DMs and messages you're getting. But look how it comes back to you.
Well, it's part of the greater purpose. Like even with other shops, we make it a point to network. Like when we started the shop in Santa Paula, we purposely looked. We didn't want to. There's only three shops there. But one handmade tattoo has been there for a long time. And out of respect, I didn't want to be too close to them. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go on the complete opposite side. But, you know, we always had it. My wife and I were like, we're going to reach out to the other shop and become kind of friends with them. But Pops, the one that owns Handmade, came in when we were building the shop. Like, welcome, you know, you were thinking, because old times, they'd be like, I want to burn your shop down, or you shouldn't be starting another shop near us, but it was a different vibe completely. So he came over with his wife and welcomed us and everything, and then we just built a relationship. Like, so we'll refer stuff to his shop, he refers things to our shop, we do community things together. Santa Paula has all kinds of community things going on. You know, on Christmas, we'd go by and drop off gifts to them. It's just a really good vibe between all the different shops. And I've never seen that.
Uh-huh.
It's always been like they're friends, but it's really competitive.
So if you're in Oxnard, what made you choose Santa Paula? Like, you knew that about the city already? Or
everything just kind of worked out. I didn't know anything about the city. Uh-huh. I only really, like in Santa Paula, I would go to my cousin's house. That was it. I didn't know. And they were kind of like, lived in a... You know, the old school, it was just like the East Side, same thing.
Yeah.
But we didn't know about the business stuff. But my wife and I happened to buy a house over there. And that was kind of last minute because we had seen that house a bunch of times and we kind of passed it up thinking it was too small. Mm-hmm. And then for some reason, she calls me and tells me what popped back up. So somebody was buying it. It was an escrow. It popped out. So I told her, well, go over there and check it out. And then when she went to check it out, she said it was perfect. And she's sending me this video of it. And it is perfect because now all of our kids are gone. It's just us and the dog. You know. But the house is small. It's like an old house, but completely renovated, but a huge yard. So we can have all these like family parties and stuff like that. That's so nice. It was just perfect. So we moved there. We still had the Oxnard shop. And then we started walking around Santa Paula. Like, let's go have breakfast here. Let's go have lunch there. And, like, they have a freaking really cool old school downtown. Uh-huh. Like, it's just really dope. So we just kind of, like, started throwing it out there. First, you throw the idea in the universe. And it you know. And then she's the one that found the building from a friend of hers.
Nice.
And even that building we thought was too big. We're like, it's too big, a little bit too expensive, more than we want to take on. But at the time, we had, like, 4 employees.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the Oxnard shop.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so everybody working for us, we had about 4, and then we're like, let's just do it. And we just did it, and then we dumped a bunch of money into it. You know, it was like an older building.
You guys did a good job of documenting that. Yeah, bringing it to life. Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then it just, like, these young kids would start coming in because I didn't really want to work with the old artists that had been kind of recycled. Mm-hmm. I mean, no disrespect, but I wanted a new vibe. You know. Yeah. You know, I wanted a new thing. So little by little, these young kids are like, you have an apprenticeship. And we just started hiring, you know, and it went good. You know, there was a couple people that maybe didn't fit our vibe and we just moved a different direction, but it was still cool. But yeah, I didn't know that the purpose was to have all these young people and teach these young people.
Yeah.
I thought maybe 1 or 2. And then sometimes when I get frustrated and I tell my wife, I'm like, I don't want to freaking deal with this no more.
That's a lot to handle.
I'm like, I could go back to like a one-man studio and make a good living and be completely cool. You know, it's like having the big shop is not necessarily to make us a bunch of money, even though you want to be profitable, mm-hmm. but it's just, you know, it just worked out that way.
And I noticed something in the photos and videos you guys were posting when you guys were redoing the shop, that you had your kids involved and they were helping in there. Are they still now involved with the shop, or was it just to renovate the place?
No, they're still involved. Like my daughters work on the social media side, and then my son Philly tattoos right next to me. So he has a little construction job, but he tattoos here and there. But his goal is to tattoo full time. But he's been tattooing since he was young. And then my son Isaiah is starting to come over now. He's like a really good artist, really good graffiti artist, and he wants to get into it. He has a good job going on too, but you know.
Yeah, I mean,
so it is a family thing for sure.
That's like a blessing right there, just to not only have the business that supports your life, but to be able to have your kids be working with you.
Yeah.
You know, I've...
Well, not only that, my wife, she had a really good job working for Ventura County for many years, and she got to the point where she's just like, I don't want to do this anymore. So she left her really good job, which is crazy. Nobody's going to leave a really good job, but I could understand it because I did that.
Job, yeah.
Good benefits, all that stuff. She left her job and took over the whole business side. And that kind of like revolutionized everything because I didn't realize how much crap I was doing, you know? I'd be tattooing and like, oh shoot, I got to pay the freaking Wi-Fi or they're going to turn it off tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I just had so many things to do. So she came in and completely organized it to a point where it's like real corporate. Like this person brought in this much money. They took home this much money. Everything.
Yeah, you could see it at a glance.
Yeah, it was like she brought her experience because she was the head supervisor. She was the main supervisor for the entire department where she was working. So she brought in all of that. But not only that, she you know, happier because she doesn't have to go do that corporate thing, you know.
Yeah, well, not only corporate, but government.
Oh. Yeah, just like answering.
Corporate is one thing, government is another. Corporate, you could at least move up the ladder if you're taking care of business. Government's like, nope.
Yeah,
this person's been here longer than you.
And I think she almost came to the point where she was plateaued. There was only one person above her. But it's just, you work that job because you're paying the bills, but you understand it doesn't make you happy. Mm-hmm. Like, I could never go back to project management and all that kind of stuff. I would just...
Yeah.
I can never do it.
And just having a family business alone, I think, like, we've gotten so far away from it. Like, you know, 100 years ago, we're working on farms all together. Mm-hmm. Not all you had was your family to make sure you could eat and sell what you had left over. Then corporations come, you know, the Industrial Revolution, and all of a sudden, you're getting plucked away and you're going to go, we got so caught up in working for other people. Mm-hmm. And it's like family businesses like yours, I hope catch on more and more. And I got a family business myself, mm-hmm. so I'm blessed with it as well, where when we work so much to just provide, we don't get to see our kids as much.
No, but that's why I left it, because I felt like I was missing things.
Yeah, now you have a family business where you're not only teaching them how to make a living, but you also got to spend time with them.
Yeah, like now we don't, I mean, we got a bunch of kids, grandkids that are playing sports, so we're like all over the place, but we don't miss that stuff. We could be there. If the kids need us to babysit or something, we could do that, you know? Before I didn't have that kind of flexibility. Now even more so, because we have such a solid team that we could take off. Like, we just went to Hawaii, you know, a couple weeks ago. They open, close, take care of everything, do everything, you know? You have people that you could trust. Before, I wouldn't do that because I didn't really trust anybody but myself. I was like, I gotta take care of all this, but
and I don't think you realize the stress that puts on you until you're away from it. You know, till you finally let go and say, okay, they're gonna handle the shop. You still carry it for a little bit, but once they prove themselves over and over, whoever you leave in charge, you gotta decompress a little bit. And I know it happened to me when I left, when I stepped down from my office furniture company to start Solid Foundations full time. I didn't even know how much stress I was carrying around from running, you know, 15, 20 man crews, being on project deadlines. And I loved it. It was fun to do. It was challenging, but doesn't mean it doesn't build up stress. Yeah. And we're not out there taking vacations. We're not out there getting massages and taking care of ourselves.
I never went day in, day out. Never went on vacations. The only vacations I went on was like I would win the president's award for the company and they would send us, but it was a business trip.
Yeah.
It was like a seminar type thing. But now it's like we pretty much go, like my wife will be like, oh, I found some cheap tickets to go to Hawaii, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to book it.
So for you, how much, now that you know what it is to just grind yourself into the ground, to building a team and know you could step away and actually treat yourself, spend time with your wife, rejuvenate, that it actually helps you be a better business owner and business manager?
A lot. Like I never allowed myself to decompress. See, and that's what I think, when I go back to like when I was struggling with the mental stuff, as I going, snap. You know, now I don't get to that point. I will decompress. I'm not saying that I don't stress out like, dang, I'm going to be gone for a week. I'm not going to make this money, that money. But then when I get over there, I don't really care. I'm just chilling on the beach, you know?
Yeah, there's still that voice in the head. It just gets a little more quieter and quieter. To me, it doesn't go away either. But you learn to be, you build so much confidence that your building's going to be there. It's not going to be burnt down. Your employees are still going to be there. Business is going to be good. And I think we just constantly keep getting better and better from that.
And I think just being mentally stronger, you have a better viewpoint. So now it's like, I'm not trusting my own track record, even though I have a good track record to pay these bills. I'm just trusting God's track record. I've never missed a payment, always pay my stuff on time. And it's come close, you know, like a day before the mortgage, we're hustling it, but it happens.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think now that I'm not as mentally foggy from all this other junk, I could think and be cool. And sometimes my wife, because she's dealing with the numbers, like this bill's going to go this day, this bill's going to go that day. And that's stressful. You know, I'd be like, don't trip. We're going to be cool. We'll get it. And I really believe it, though. Because before I would try to say like positive affirmations, but not necessarily like, oh, shoot, now I got to come through.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I went through the same thing with my businesses. Our biggest worry was payroll. So, you know. Yeah. You got 15 men crews and they worked all their 2 weeks. They want money. They don't want excuses at the end of the pay period. You can't tell them, well, I thought a check was coming in, or, you know, we didn't budget right. But after so long, like you say, having faith, because if you do try to put it on yourself, you'll bury yourself in the ground with the stress.
You'll put yourself into a negative mindset that doesn't produce anything.
Yeah. If you switch that mind to say, and this is the beautiful thing about having a relationship with God, you could say, hey, can you take this stress for me? I'm going to put it down. You pick it up and I'm not going to go back to it. Okay. And that's what I found over and over, that whatever it was, never missed a payroll, never missed a deadline. Things always got done because instead of putting energy into worrying about it, you hand it off and you put that energy into executing.
I learned that from that. Like, again, going back to Alan, I learned that from him. Sometimes payroll was $100,000 for 2 weeks. And he just never seemed stressed. But I would seem like, okay, we got to pull money from here, this, that. Jobs would fall through. There was a lot going on, but I've never to this day ever seen him get mad or blow a few. He was just like, and now he's retired and all he does is work at his church and do Bible study. He's just really calm, and I learned a lot from him. Yeah. But I didn't implement it in my life until later.
Yeah, later, well, later you did. On. Yeah, you learned.
I'm implementing it. I'm not there always. Sometimes I stress.
Do you talk to your, I know you teach your apprentices the actual art of the business. You teach them the business side of the business. Do you work with them on mindset at all?
All the time. Like, it's funny because they'll think like, wow, he's getting on my case, but not anyone else, but he doesn't know that it's happened to everyone. I remember I told him the other day, you think I'm only challenging you, but I'm challenging everyone else here. And the other guy, yep. But yeah. I do it like on a personal basis. Why did you charge so little? Well, I'm just learning. I didn't, you know, but you got to know your worth. They came into a tattoo shop. They knew they were going to pay. Why would you give it, you know, things like that. And I'm talking about positive mind things, you know, and I'm always sending them audiobooks to read. You know, like I just sent them all The Alchemist and told them, like, you got to read this. It talks about your personal legend or your purpose on earth and things like that. And some of them do. They really do. They read it and study. But it's always like a positive, professional thing. There's so much. You're teaching people how to be good people.
Yeah. But that's so rare. There's very, very small percentage of businesses that will invest into their people's mindsets.
Yeah, it's different because they're training, other businesses are training you to work for them and to stay with them and retire from them. We tell them at the beginning, our ultimate goal is for you one day to have your own shop. So like we leave the door wide open. You're not going to lose our friendship. You're going to gain our support, you know, like, so it's different. Like we're not trying to keep people forever, even though we'd want to.
Yeah.
We want to keep the good people, but you know.
Yeah, it all works out. And you mentioned in your story that you guys bought a house. Were you homeowners before that, or was that your very first house?
We both owned homes before, yeah.
And so that is not very common from where we come from.
No.
So how did you get to that point to be able to afford not only one home, but you've owned multiple homes before?
Yeah. I think like the other ones were bad experiences. You know, you learn from that, which kind of scares you a little bit. But it's always kind of been in our mindset. Like, you know, we want to own. But to get this house, I think it just happened the right time. Because we call it our little retirement home.
Yeah.
You know, because we would have gone out and overextended ourselves and bought this big old home. Now we say it's like small enough or people aren't going to try to live with us. They could come stay the night, but nobody can live with us.
What I want to get for the listeners, though, is like the financial part, the discipline, like what the savings, what did it take to build up your credit? Don't spend on certain things. Like what, because there's a certain mindset for that. And then what are the practices for somebody to
saving.
Be able to buy a home?
You have to save money. Even if it's just $20 here, $30 there. We used to have like my wife would be on top of all the bills, but we had a safe and it became kind of fun because we're saving, like we're going to put X amount of dollars in there, X amount into the bank. And we got into this habit of saving money, and it would get to $5,000 to $10,000. Like growing up, I never saw that kind of money in my life, ever. My parents never bought a new car. My mom bought her new car for the first time, and she's in her 60s. You know, they never had anything. So it's like we just started saving, and we had goals. Like, we got to get a house. We can't, like, money sitting in a safe doesn't do you any good.
Yeah. Losing value.
Yeah. And so we started talking to the lender, and I remember one of the lenders saying, I go, well, I got X amount of dollars and saved. Where is it? Well, it's in the safe. Well, unless it's in the bank for at least X amount of time, it doesn't do you any good. You can have $100,000 in a safe. It doesn't do you any good.
Yeah. And you're speaking from the point, because when you go to buy a house, you need to qualify to get a mortgage, and they're going to look at your bank statements and see where you're going. So that's good for listeners to understand. Money under the mattress.
Do any good.
Yeah, it may save you on taxes, you know, if you're trying to go that route, which is you have to be very careful of. But if you're trying to make big moves, you got to have a proven track record that you're financially stable.
Yeah, well, like if you're an independent contractor, a tattooer, you don't do taxes, you go to get a car, you have to have a cosigner because you can't prove that you made any money. You might be making $1,000 a day, but you can't prove it.
Yeah.
So in reality, you want to pay taxes. You want to do those kind of things because, you know, if you get in a wreck, you could go get some help from the bank or whatever. You can't do anything. You're stuck. Mm-hmm. Credit's like so important. Like keeping that credit top notch is so important. And I think my wife and I kind of learned different ways on how to pay things. Like we pay things off fast. Certain things you want to drag out to kind of build up the credit process and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of discipline that goes into it.
Yeah. And not only to buy a house, but if you're opening up your own shop, starting businesses, that credit comes in handy then as well.
See, and you know, to go back to like the saving practices, I always tell people, like, you need to save because if it gets slow, you could take care of your stuff. Mm-hmm. But not only that, you need to save so that if an opportunity comes up, you could get on it. So
yeah, we bought the, that's a missed one right
yeah,
there.
Yeah. So we bought the house, and then the opportunity to open that shop happened a few months after we bought the house. Like, mm-hmm. buying a house, you're done. You already lose all your money. And then this house, we didn't take any of the furniture. We bought everything new, just the way we wanted it. But we still had the wherewithal and then the money kind of set aside to be able to open up the business.
Yeah.
And then that was like, you know, a lot of money dumped into it. But to think about to buy a home and to open a big business within the same year, that's crazy. Yeah. It still sounds crazy to us sometimes when we talk about it. We're like, dang, I worked so hard and I made a lot of money. What did I do with it? Oh, I bought a house and opened a business.
Yeah. And I think that's just us growing, right? There's levels to this game where somebody who's a millionaire, they'll be like, opened up a business and bought a house in the same year. Yeah, I do that every month or something like that. But there's levels to it. And I think we need to take the time to be grateful, pat ourselves on our back, be proud of ourselves, and enjoy that moment when it happens. Because then, or else you're just chasing, well, you're just going to constantly be chasing the next thing, and you're going to pass through life and look back and not enjoyed any of it. You
know? Like the first time I bought a house, I bought the house that I couldn't afford, which wasn't anything. I ended up buying a condo. I didn't like it. It wasn't a good situation. Everything was bad about it.
Yeah.
But this time it's like we fell into the right one. We made offers on a couple other houses that we didn't get. Because a lot of people that are retiring now sell their family home or buying the smaller houses have cash.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're like, okay, I'll give you X amount of wealth. I'll give it all in cash. No escrow. You know, so like we learned a lot about money like that. And then this one just happened. Like she said, make an offer on that house. Made an offer. The next day he calls and tells they accepted the offer. I'm like, what the heck? But I don't think it even really hit me until like freaking after escrow closed. And we just get a text saying, congratulations, your house is recorded in the county and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, that's big, man, because I don't know many homies of ours that are homeowners, me being included in one of them. One of the things with learning business the hard way, like you learned it and I learned it, one of the hard lessons I learned was massive debt, massive unsecured debt, massive tax debt. Unsecured debt, there's a little tool called bankruptcy, but you can't claim that for your taxes, right? So there's some nice wisdom that I have now from going through what I went through, but I made some bad mistakes financially. And so to me, it's just great. I'm proud of you. Happy to be, you know, be a part of your life and to know that one way or another, you're leading by example. With our homies now, there's still some that are just getting out of prison for decades and years, you know, and they're tired of it and they want to make changes. And they got people like you that they can go to and say, hey, Philip, you know, how's it done?
It's
and,
crazy.
And you show that it can be done.
Yeah, like the ones I talked to. But there's a few, like, even a couple homies that were lifers that because they got convicted young, the laws changed, they got out. Those ones came out running, dude. They're in college. They're doing this and that, working with people. They're doing really, really well. Yeah. So I think the mindset for everybody's switching. Like, nobody wants, you understand that that's like a dead-end road.
At a certain point, thank God.
Yeah. And you're not turning your back on your homies by doing good.
Yeah.
Like we got homies, like there's some homies on the east side that own a couple homes, own a really nice lowrider. It's like that dude work hard.
Yeah.
He had to make choices to not be out there, not be using drugs and being drunk on the streets to get his thing together.
And I look back years and I could see the homies that do have those homes, I could see they were moving different.
Way different even back then,
you know.
Way different, yeah.
And it always gets me thinking, like at Solid Foundations, we have this thing called the Brick Program where people from the community or just businesses, they sponsor a brick that we put up in our headquarters. And with that money, it's a monthly donation. With that money, we're able to offer like free classes, or if a kid's doing good in classes, help them get to the next level in their training. But I look back and I'm thinking, like, how many of our homies have potential, but they didn't have the family, or their family didn't have the resources to say, hey, kid, go try this. You know, there's more than being at the creek smoking and drinking. There's more than just going and like getting in fights at school. Like, try all these different things, see what you like, and then let's pour the resources into you so you can do it. And that's why the Brick Program is special to me, because it allows us to offer free classes to kids. Just come in and try it, because that's all we want. If you don't like it, go try, you know, try a martial arts class. You don't like it, try a work ethic class. You don't like it, go try a fitness class. If you don't like them, go, at least you know you tried it, you know? And so that is always something that sticks into my mind of there's a lot of homies that are now that, you know, I'm 40, but a lot of homies even 20 years ago were dying from overdoses.
Well, that's the thing is like you're seeing like that generation of drugs and prison, drugs and prison. Yep. Those people are dying off, bro. Like a lot of people are dying all the time and it's a completely different generation. So now these young kids are seeing like people traveling, doing this, doing that. Like homies don't even dress like homies anymore.
Oh, I know.
You don't even know how, I wouldn't even guess that half of these guys are homies, you know?
Yeah.
They don't even look the same. I remember a couple of homies coming to visit me and one of them long hair, different, dressed like, I think it's cool. You're being an individual, but like things are changing. People want things. And to stay in California, you better figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to figure it out because I mean, you could make $100,000 a year, which hardly anybody makes $100,000 a year and still not be able to afford to stay in California.
Absolutely.
But you have to make certain life changes. Like, I don't need to do this, 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 and this. I'll sacrifice those things so that I can have this, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not like we're balling out of controls. You know, we're like everybody else, check to check to check, making things happen. But we're living the way we want. And that's the goal was always to be able to live, to do whatever we want, whenever we want it.
Yeah. And that, and you add you being content and happy in your life.
Yeah. That's like we scaled everything right down.
That's success right there. And so I want to thank you for being an example, not only just for the homies, but just for people in general, because you show what can be done and you show that it wasn't handed to you. You didn't go to school for it, but you can work towards it. And so I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for coming onto the podcast once again.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we'll be doing it in the future.
Cool. Thank you,
brother. Appreciate you. Ooh.